Hi, Jane.
Hey, Kate.
How are you?
Doing well.
So we just want to say welcome back to
What
What
the
the
hell
Hell is
is
Elder
elder
Care?
care? We want to give everybody out there a big hi. It's nice to be back, the two of us. As we say in our professional world, life got in the way over the last couple of months, but we're back and we have a great speaker tonight, and I'll turn it over to Kate.
Yeah, I want to say how honored I am to have Cheryl Lucas on our podcast tonight. Cheryl and I have been friends and co-workers for a long time, and I have to tell you, I'm always in awe of the amount of knowledge that she has in the field of mental health and addiction. So, Cheryl, you're going to talk to us a little bit tonight about addiction and mental health in the elderly. So, can you give us a little bit of information about yourself and your background?
Sure. It's a pleasure to be with you, ladies. This is one of my favorite topics, elder care. I'm Cheryl Lucas. I've been in the field for a little over 30 years, both in mental health and chemical dependency and other addictions. I'm a licensed professional counselor. I'm an international certified addictions counselor and a national certified counselor. But I have had the honor to work with many people through all different age ranges. And my heart at this point is really focused on the elders of our society, because I really do believe they are a vulnerable population when we talk about drug and alcohol addiction, when we talk about pornography, gambling addiction, etc. These are all dynamics that many people are finding them in when they're in that next phase of life. And that's what I want to address tonight. So
Wonderful,
does
wonderful.
that sound good?
Yes,
Yeah,
and
that sounds great.
can I just say, of course, Cheryl doesn't even get started, and I'm interrupting. Kate, don't you love when I do this? But you
Sure.
know, I have to say, I'm sitting here just excited because I will tell you, in the field of 44 years, I was an old into nursing and then into medical. So this is really foreign to me as a licensed social worker. So I'm really glad to have you with us tonight.
Oh, thank you.
And I think it's good for our listeners to understand that they might want to look at their grandparents a little bit closer to see if they have any addiction, correct, going on. So you never know,
Siblings,
right?
maybe a spouse.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, in this discussion tonight, I think will be helpful for the actual individuals as well as their family members. And I have been in many different venues. I've been very honored to not only work within treatment facility, drug and alcohol treatment facility, hospital psychiatry, private practice, employee assistance program. So I've seen trends over the years, both in mental health and substance use disorder. And I do, as I mentioned previously, do see the target population and that vulnerability, what we're talking about. Now, just alone, I have a statistic for you that the number of adults age 55 and over who have actually sought out addiction treatment has increased by more than 50% between 2009 and 2020.
Wow, that's interesting.
And this goes to show that many trends are leading towards our older Americans are the vulnerable population. Now, there are factors that we're seeing that contribute to this. Many people are so excited and they're planning for their retirements. And very often that's a financial planning, but mentally and emotionally and structurally and sometimes logistically, we're not planning as specifically. So when we get there, many people, males in particular, feel like they've lost their identity. It's not who you are, it's what I do. Hey, I'm so and so, and this is what I do. Now, females, yes, we're proud of the work we do, but we're usually like, hi, I'm so and so. So we don't carry it as strongly as men do with that identity. So when that is no longer there, males and females not having the structure they're accustomed to, deadlines, purposefulness and meaningfulness that they used to have, that can be a target. We also see that when they have diminished family support, when they cognitively begin to change, when they physically begin to change, and I don't think any of us imagine we'll get there until we do. And it is, there's grief involved, there's fear, and any number of emotions going on simultaneously, especially if someone has a family history of addiction or other mental health diagnoses, they can also be vulnerable. And we see that a person's friend and family support circle, if that usually shrinks. Now, I know with some of the older folks I'm talking with most recently, you know, providing them support, they will talk about the dwindling support circle. Their friends that they've known from years back are now gone. Mm-hmm. People they could relate to that understood their nostalgia and their frame of reference from back then have disappeared, have passed on, moved away, et cetera, but usually passed on. Then that gets them more in touch with their own mortality. And I need to say that our society is not being really kind to our older Americans. We are in the throwaway society. And I'm just going to say that, meaning we are not respecting and holding in high regard older folks. And, you know, regardless of how old our listeners are tonight, it's really something to think about. Now, a person's choices are their choices, but I'm talking specifically about vulnerability. When we talk about mental health diagnoses, anxiety, depression, et cetera, grief and bereavement in older folks, it's isolation, I think, mm-hmm. is number one, that really has many people's functioning diminishing, cognitively in particular, especially during, you know, we still have active COVID now, but in that March 18th, 2020, from then on, things changed. And for our older Americans who were isolative to begin with, just because of their circumstances, now we add on, no, you can't go out. Right. There isn't the social interaction. And they had themselves and that was it. And now we're seeing the fallout several years later.
I think, I don't mean to interrupt.
No, go right ahead.
I think there's also that mentality that when you get to be a certain age, you know, they will say, family members or friends or whoever, what else do they have to live for? So let them do it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I just remember that as a home health social worker being told that. Well, what else are they, you know, what else are they going to do? They have nothing else to live for, so why don't we just let them do it? Oh, well, they're losing a lot of money on playing those games. And they do have a lot to live for because they're not able to pay for their utilities. And so is that correct?
Yes. And we do find that whether you call it generation gaps or people just not trying to find a way to connect with their older loved ones, you know, I'll just let them do whatever they want to entertain themselves.
Right.
And this is another thing. Now, any type of acting out behavior, any kind of substance abuse or misuse or substance use disorder, any kind of acting out like gambling, pornography, etc., we get good at what we practice. And if that's their routine, that creates a neural pathway in the brain that's a what I call a default setting. So whether they have a lonely day, a sad day, a bad day, et cetera, whatever, it could be a rainy day or a happy day or a sunny day, they start to default to this acting out behavior. And now that's the new setting. So what they're doing is they're not reinforcing their life coping skills whatsoever. They've now defaulted to this acting out. So they're all the more vulnerable. That could be gambling. Now, I am not here. This is a non-judgment zone. So I am not judging anyone's choices or behavior. I will say that I identify vulnerability. So it increases our vulnerability when the only social outlet an individual might have is, hey, to the neighbor, you want to go down to the casino? even at the grocery store, you'll see folks, you know, lining up at the lottery, you know, register. And again, not judging. It's just, it can, you know, create a, it can go from a social activity now to a very steadfast routine, which can put us, you know, at risk. So when we talk about substances in particular, prescription drugs and alcohol are the two main substances we find that older adults gravitate towards. And what happens is their metabolism has changed. The chemistry in their brain has changed. If there's a family history of addiction, all these factors are, become risk factors. And, you know, when I've worked with older adults in the treatment setting, you know, loneliness, past trauma, they never unpacked, recent losses, significant losses, things like that, separation from family support, et cetera. They have identified that these are factors that really, you know, put them at risk. They, at the time, they didn't see that because, you know, our acting out behavior on the front end looks comforting. It's entertaining. Heaven knows it's distracting. But what we're not seeing on the back end is the destruction and the decompensation of our ability to live and function and flourish healthy, you know. Now, I have a word to families. You know, you don't have full control over another individual, but if you have been uncomfortable, and we know what we were talking about here, when you've been uncomfortable in your gut, like something's up, something's happening, they don't seem the same, and you notice certain habits, and you might even think, well, you know, they're in the golden years. Let them just do what makes them happy. Okay, I understand where you're coming from. But on the other hand, if it's concerning you and worrying you legitimately, then it's really okay to investigate further. And sometimes families are the front end. Sometimes it's the family member who go gets help from a counselor or a pastor or, you know, even a treatment center or something, or a doctor, PCP. They're asking questions. They're sharing their concerns, you know, to get support and validate that, yeah, this is something that's actually going on. What can we do about it?
You know what? You know what I think of, if I can interrupt just for a second, Cheryl, a gentleman who's lost his wife after about 58 years of marriage, children are out of state. As you said, networking, friends, sort of couple in a nursing home, couple of deceased. What do they do with themselves when they don't have anybody to really see and monitor them? They just kind of go about their business, and then all of a sudden one day it's just a problem. Is that what you see a great deal of?
Well, that is a perfect example right there, where life as they've known it has shifted probably very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody pulled the carpet of reality right under their, out from under their feet. Mm-hmm. And I think that many older adults are painting themselves in a corner, like, well, this is all for me. This is all there is for me. I'm not as young as I used to be. The world is for the young. And, you know, I've put in my time or done the best I could do. And I can tell you there's so many successful examples of older adults finding themselves later in their lives, finding their special somebody in their 70s, finding another purpose. Now, I watched my dad reinvent himself. He is a pastor, and in his mid-80s became an author. So now he's written, I hope I get this total correct. I think it's about 9 books, and is still going strong. So you just never know. I mean, that was a passion of his. He didn't, you know, as an active pastor back in his younger days, well, younger, he still was doing it up through his, you know, till about 80. But, you know, it's keeping our imaginations alive. Like, okay, I'm allowed to grieve. I'm allowed to reflect. I mean, we're in the stage of integration right now. We're reflecting on the legacy that we've developed and what we want to leave. But we never have to just say this is all there is. We can reinvent ourselves. We can find hobbies and activities. I mean, it does take some legwork and some bravery to go out there. But I'm going to give you an example. So now I may not be as old as some of the older adults we're talking about here, but I am widowed. And there are times that, you know, my flourishing young adults that I've raised are on their own doing their thing, and my friends may not be available because they're busy with their families. So I've kind of made a challenge to myself. Now, I can just say that's all there is, or I can go out and, you know, investigate a new adventure. So I have challenged myself. So recently this summer, there were two concert events. One was at PPG Arena, and it was the group that I have loved since I was a teenager, all through college, still do. And there they were. Well, I thought to myself, nobody was available. And I went ahead and just went on faith, bought tickets, went down there, met some wonderful people that I sat beside and had the blast of my life. And I didn't think another thing about it. And then there was another one coming up, and I actually went to that one, met some amazing people, had an amazing time. Now, I'm not saying I'm the deal. I'm saying that any of us, at any time we choose, can challenge ourselves to get out of our comfort zone. We can re-embrace our lives. We can redefine where we are. And that actually is a protective factor. So when we're talking about people who legitimately do not have that support from family, friends, interests, etc., it may be looking into churches. It may be looking into your local community center. It may be looking at meetup.com, where they have groups of individual interests and activities that, I've always been interested in that. Now there's a group of people that are interested in it. I will tell you from an addiction standpoint, when somebody has purpose and they have meaning and they have something to aim for and accountability partners, that certainly becomes more of a protective factor. Now, that's not a guarantee they won't act out and have substance misuse and disorder and other mental health issues. But take an older individual who is depressed. I mean, your example, Jane, of someone who lost their spouse after 58 years, they're going to be ridden with grief and bereavement because that was their person. That was their life partner. So I'm not saying it is easy to do it by any means, but it would be very easy to stay stuck in that place. And then when we default on a negative acting out behavior, then we're going to get good at it. And that makes us more vulnerable. If we're looking at, okay, I see I'm at risk here. What can I do to counter that? And that's what we talk about in treatment, is how are we going to counter the tendencies to want to isolate, to stay stuck, now grieving, there is no expiration date on it. But if somebody is productively grieving, they're going in the right direction. I mean, and again, I'm not judging how someone's grieves. I think when we self-medicate, we're not grieving. We're acting out because of it, but we're not unpacking it. We're trying to run away from it and postpone it. So we're not working through it. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense. Yeah. And your terminology with that, as in complicated grief, you can see the difference, you know, as people doing productive grieving and complicated grieving. And I think from a mental health standpoint, what people don't think about is the many grief processes we have without a death. Everybody's always thinking of grief as it's attached to a death and a physical mm-hmm. on the earth loss. So you just covered that so well. Yeah.
But then my concern is always about the professional who is treating that person, because, you know, there are so many out there that are you know, pediatric, you know, they do children or they do young adults, you know, in treatment. But to find somebody that focuses on the needs of the geriatric or the older population, I mean, are you seeing an increase in that with where mental health professionals are adding that on to as more of a specialty? Or is that something that's still kind of put on the back burner? Because it is different, right?
Very much so. Well, there has to be, I think we could agree that there has to be a level of relatability mm-hmm. with whomever we're working with. But now I am happy to say I'm watching different entities add on supports for older adults, mental health-wise, mm-hmm. like different, you've got different packages of Medicare.
Right.
And some of them, this for the supplemental, let's say, and the supplemental is actually adding on mental health.
Good.
So they've got designated people they're utilizing.
And that's important. Absolutely.
Now, some of the substance abuse treatment centers, unfortunately, it's not as widespread as it needs to be, but they have started to develop specialty tracts. So some of the specialty tracts, for example, could be teens. Some tracts might be women. However, they've begun to add the more, they call it geriatric tract, but it could be 55 plus, you know, because there are special needs, special understandings. You just want to be able to relate to people. And I think that's important.
I agree.
I want to know what group you saw at PPG. I just want to say, I'm older than you. I want to know what group you did this in.
I saw Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yes,
and Lionel Richie.
And Earth, Wind, and Fire.
And I had some good seats. And yes, I was up dancing. I wasn't, you know, up to where the people behind me in the row behind me couldn't see. But there were select songs I couldn't help myself. So it really doesn't matter how old. And I must say, I went to see the Commodores and the Spinners
for my next one
at the Rivers and Entertainment Center.
Good for you. I just had to ask that, Kate.
Oh, no.
Well, and I'm just saying, it's an idea of, you know, why should we box ourselves in? Why should we limit ourselves? You know?
I agree. I think that's wonderful.
Now, I if you don't mind, I'd like to just give a little public service announcement out there. I'm noticing a trend with older adults with the substance called Kratom, Kratom as in Mary. Now, this substance, the FDA has really attempted for, I think, almost 7 years, 5 to 7 years, to put this particular substance on the controlled substance list. It needs to be there, but it keeps getting blocked. My point of bringing this out this evening is, for some reason, older adults have found this substance. And unfortunately, it can be easily obtained on the internet. It has psychoactive properties along with sedation properties. And the problem is, people, and it's in a powder form, it's a white powder form. So people usually put that in their beverages, tea, coffee, etc. So if you're older and you may have rheumatoid arthritis or any other types of chronic pain, this is really a draw. Hey, if something's going to make me feel calm, it has an opioid reference to it, but it also has the hallucinogen property as well. And if somebody unknowingly, you know, thinks that their quantity they're using in their beverage, what, 2 spoonfuls or what have you of this powder, or somebody doing more, or they're doing it all through the day or night, family members are going to find them comatose or psychotic, because you will lose your frame of reality. And it concerns me, because I'm hearing family members share with me that their older adult has gotten connected with, and I have all ages apparently seeking this particular substance out, but it's very scary out there. And prescription drugs in particular, older Americans, you know, older adults in general, are heavily medicated on everything you could imagine. So I think that's another vulnerability that we're going to need to look at. I think if there could be more longitudinal studies in the older population. We are living longer. And I think that would really benefit us so we know how we could best support them. Some of that attention.
Yeah, I think it comes down to respect for that age group. And I think that is key. I agree with you about the throwaway. You know, is that correct? That's what you mentioned, Cheryl. But I really feel like we don't provide enough respect for our seniors.
I would agree with that.
I mean, I'm a senior now, and I am concerned about that. Will I be listened to as I get older? Jane?
Oh, absolutely. When I retired, I didn't think that my identity was so much my profession, my career. But then all of a sudden when people say, well, where do you work? And I say, I'm retired. Oh, there's a difference in conversation. There's a difference in flows of conversation. In our very first podcast, and Cheryl, Kate and I talked, I just said, I really feel almost non-existent. And this podcast brought life back to me in some respects, because maybe I worked too much and didn't know what I wanted. And I loved your word, reinvent. Reinvent. Your dad reinvented himself. People can reinvent themselves. It's not like, geez, if you have an addiction, you just stop in the next couple of days. But it involves work like everything else in our lives or work. But I like that word, and I applied that to myself, Kate. So yes.
Yes.
I appreciate that. Well, you know, I just had a thought. If I were addiction, I would really relish the fact that, ooh, they're alone. They've lost someone special. They've lost their identity. They've have a loss of respect. They have lost, you know, the occupation that they, you know, just because it's phased out. I mean, yeah, it's just like a breeding ground of issues. But I think if somebody legitimately within the access of hearing our voices this evening is really feeling like they're struggling, or they know someone who is, there is a lot of non-judgmental available support that could really help a family and or an individual get some direction. All does not have to be lost. But, you know, if somebody's believing that's all there is, then that's kind of digging them into a ditch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's the key, is that a lot of our seniors do not know where to go, you know, because there's so much emphasis on others, the other population, that seniors, you know, you can call your local area agency on aging, you know, for elder care resources. But when it comes to mental health, shouldn't there maybe be a special line for them? Right.
I think that's a fabulous idea. I had a woman contact me the other day who was saying, I have searched high and low to try to find a counselor who actually will accept my Medicare, because that really is shrinking providers who are actually accepting that. And when you think about our seniors, they've done the working and the living and the paying and supporting of their communities. And this is the time to honor them.
I agree 100%.
That's what we said when we started the podcast: experience and empowerment and education. Those were the three E's that we believed in, that we wanted people to still know that you may have raised your family, you may have had your career or a couple of careers, and but you are still an essential individual in this society of ours. So, yes.
Very true.
I agree. And Cheryl, we truly appreciate your time.
You are most welcome.
I appreciate everything you had to say. The statistic at the beginning in itself was staggering.
I
And I know the years that you gave were 09 to, you know, what's interesting to me is I wonder what people were seeing just from 2020, you know, through 2024, mm-hmm. because we saw that isolation in the nursing homes. We saw it in homes. We saw it with the homebound. We saw it with everyday working people, what it did. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to come around again on this because you mentioned nursing home assisted living. I think we should have more mental health resources available to those, you know, especially in there, because when you go into a nursing home, right, you do become isolated, even though you mm-hmm. might have family coming in every day. If you're lucky, you still have that feeling of isolation because you've given up everything. And mm-hmm. now you're,
and it's more dependent than ever,
right? So
on others,
but I just feel that it all comes down to who's going to be paying for this. Why isn't Medicare paying for this? I mean, I know what the process is, but I just it just sometimes I can't wrap my head around of how we're not providing more for our seniors.
And you don't really hear that being the top of the political agenda either of mm-hmm. what are we going to do for our older
yeah.
adults either. But now I did want to give you several resources.
Sure.
The National Institute of Drug Abuse has a website and phone number that people can reach out to get help. SAMHSA is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and they have a hotline, the 800-662-4357. They have a whole dedicated area of resources for older adults. And the American Association for Geriatric Psychiatry, they also have a database that's a national resource center of any number of things.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
No, you're welcome.
Thank you, Cheryl. Anything else you'd like to say beside the resources? Are you?
Well, I appreciate you, Jane, and Kate doing the podcast on elder care because you, the dynamic duo, are promoting the education and knowledge and raising the awareness. So I appreciate it.
Well, and thank you because you're the one out there every day.
Yeah, you're on the front
lines. You're
out
there every day that's dedicated your lifetime.
Yes,
to that.
We appreciate it.
Yes, very much so.
And we've been very fortunate to have so many amazing professionals on this podcast. And so usually we end our podcast with a quote about aging. And Jane?
Well, you know, I like to go with my gender, women, you know, in famous quotes, but I'm going to do Henry Ford tonight.
Okay.
Because it's simple, but I thought it was very cool. Anyone who stops learning is old. It could be 20, it could be 50, or it could be 80. Anybody who continues to learn will always stay young.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
Well said.
I agree.
So that was Henry Ford.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he did something other than cars.
Cars. Well, wonderful. And once again, thank you for listening in to What the Hell
is Elder Care?